The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back, Horticulture Spelled to Rusty, and I am still buzzing from a talk I gave at the Starkville Library yesterday. Job, it was incredible. Some of my former professors were there.
Yeah, I can tell it was a good time because that was one of the first things you said to me. I just gave a big talk in Starkville, and the crowd really had me jazzed up, man.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot of people, a lot of members, you know, a whole lot of folks listen to Gestalt Gardener. Big shout out to them. Appreciate them supporting us during drive time, too. But there's a lot of members of the Mississippi Gardening Facebook page. There was just a whole bunch of folks who, you know, put in the newspaper and all that. But it was some of my professors there, and I got to tell the truth.
Things that you wanted to say way back in class, but you had a little too much respect for
them. You know, I was raised by older gardeners. My great-grandmothers were horticulturists. I helped her with her daffodils up until I was 10 years old. You know, my grandmothers were garden club ladies and all that stuff. And, you know, I was taught by people to spend a lifetime of figuring stuff out and settling down to what works. You know, tired of experimenting. Here's what works. And so when I went to university, I found out, well, here's what you can try to do that doesn't work, but we'll figure ways to pull it off.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, it's a little code. We were talking about code switching before, you know. And they didn't plant in soil. They planted in the dirt, you know, this kind of stuff. So anyway, it was a lot of fun. We had a whole bunch of fun. And looking forward to doing some more. I don't have anything coming up the next week or so, but looking forward to seeing folks all around the state. I got an email from somebody wanting to know where you were. Where's Java?
Yeah, I've been busy. I was out 1 week due to unforeseen circumstances. And then last week, we were actually on the road doing something with Visit Jackson. So it took me away from the studio. But I'm back. I'm here today.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just letting you know, my friend, that when you are off doing other real work, people interfere in my personal space. Anyway, good for us both to be back here. Hey, let's start. This is a call-in program. It's a live program, one of the rare things on National Public Radio. Here at MPB, we have locally produced programs. We have folks talking about local issues. And we're going to get dirty doing that, what we do best. We can start out right off the bat. Uh-oh, I see orange. There's an orange one. I'll go with the orange one, right?
Go with the orange one.
Jim in Jackson. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, Felder. Jim Rosenblatt here. I hope all is well with you on the rainy day.
Oh, yeah. I went out and actually stood some stuff out where it could get some rain.
I have a question about soil temperature. I understand that the soil needs to be a certain temperature. Is that true when you have to plant seeds that need to germinate, or is that also true when you're transplanting seedlings, that it needs to be a certain temperature?
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, some plants that like warm weather, you know, zinnias and tomatoes and peppers, their roots won't grow in cold weather. Matter of fact, they not only won't grow, but they actually can rot and they have problems. A lot of people have skips in their rows, you know, people who plant like beans and they don't come up nice and even. It's a lot of times because, and they blame the bad seed. Cold, wet soil. So it, you know, temperature is what starts germination. Temperature and moisture start seed germination and also help or hinder roots. So anyway, for summer stuff, everybody wants to plant, you know, last week because it was so nice and warm. But no, let's wait until the cold rains have passed. And that's usually in the South, our part of the South. Planting summer stuff before April is almost always going to be a mistake. It's a gamble, but it's almost always going to stunt plants.
Is there anything artificially you can do? For example, could you incorporate fresh manure into the soil to increase the soil temperature?
Well, you could, but that has relatively minor effect. You know, one of the best things to do is to row your garden up to where it drains better, and raised beds in high rows drain better, but also they catch more sunshine. They become solar collectors. So little raised beds and rows, you know, not only help with the draining away the cold soil, but they catch the solar energy. That's the best. You know, and some people, you could put black plastic out on top of the ground and then plant and slits through that, you know, and they'll catch heat. But then in summertime, you got to cover those up because they get too hot. But, you know, black plastic will help warm it up. Raised beds, rows will help warm it up. But other than that, the other thing is a lot of people mulch their gardens. I always say, and I learned this from a guy named Milo Burnham, Dr. Milo Burnham at Mississippi State. He said, wait until towards the end of April before you mulch so that the sunshine can help warm the soil up, because mulch will keep that from happening.
Felder, I just got back from London, and you had mentioned daffodils a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me that even though the temperatures over there were very cold and cool, the daffodils out there are all out already, just about the same time that ours are, where the temperatures are warmer.
Yeah,
so
well,
it must be something other than temperatures that drive the blooming of daffodils.
No. Daffodils, they need cool weather. One of the reasons why we can't grow as many daffodils as they do further north and in England is because it gets too hot too soon. So there are a lot of plants like lettuce, daffodils that need cold temperature. They don't like hot temperature. You know, different seasonal plants.
It was really nice to go to a place where I could speak the language.
Well, they were talking about you behind your back.
Thank you, Felder.
Okay, appreciate it. Okay, that was Jim Rosenblatt from Jackson. Let's go to Mobile, Louisiana. Louise, thank you for holding on. You called early on. What's going on?
You said Mobile, Louisiana.
Oh, I did. Okay, Mobile.
Alabama, man, come on.
Alabama. She said what we call Eastern L.A., Eastern Lower Alabama.
My name is Louise in Alabama. That's enough to confuse you. I understand.
What's up?
So now I need to know. You told us earlier in the year to start fertilizing the lawn in April.
That's right.
A couple of days ago, I mowed those weeds. I mean, not the weeds. I just mowed them down, mowed them high, just like you always tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some 13 fertilizer from last year. I know you don't really approve of it, but is it okay to use it?
It's not my place to approve or not approve something, but I have to look at it from the science point of view, from the grass point of view. Triple 13 has got nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash. Grass doesn't need much phosphorus, that middle number, and it can actually interfere with other stuff. So that's the main reason why not to use triple 13. Grass doesn't like phosphorus, which is that middle number. It likes that first number, nitrogen. The problem with triple 13 is that's ammonium nitrate, which is like cocaine in the plant world. It's fast, it's strong, it's temporary, and then it's gone. And grass likes a long, slow, steady feeding. So there's two reasons why triple 13 isn't ideal for lawns. If you're a farmer, you know, you want that fast rush. And then they come back and they use just ammonium nitrate the rest of the year. But for the lawn, it's better to go ahead, from the grass's point of view, to use one of these lawn fertilizers that's got a long, slow type of feeding nitrogen all season long. And here's the trick. It's expensive because they sell it the maximum they can get away with. When they say this bag covers so many thousand square feet, that's the most you can put out. You can make that bag go twice as far, which means it costs half as much, and the grass will be so much better off than using an agriculture fast instant result gone type of fertilizer. So, you know, okay. I do not have a problem with triple 13 or ammonium nitrate, but grass does.
Okay. Give me the number for the best, for the good fertilizer that I should use, and then I have another question.
It'll say lawn food. The first number will be high, very low second number, and the third number will be medium to high. But if it says lawn for lawns, have you got St. Augustine grass?
Yes.
Okay. I would use the stuff, go to a garden center, get the stuff they call centipede food. First and third number are the same, zero, middle number. Centipede food is great for centipede in St. Augustine, but otherwise just get anything that's just lawn fertilizer without any gimmicks, no weed and feed, no herbicide, you know, just plain old lawn fertilizer, and make the bag go twice as far as it says it go. Your grass will thank you.
Okay. Now, with the existing, I'm a war baby. I was born before World War II, and I hate to throw anything away. So is it better to throw my 13-13-13 away?
No. Put it around your shrubs and stuff.
Oh, okay. Or in the backyard where nobody sees it.
I wouldn't put it. It's a good fertilizer. It's just not a good lawn fertilizer. Lawns are, you know, we have to, it's just like dogs and fish. You feed them different things, okay? And lawns don't like ammonium nitrate and phosphorus. So it's 13-13 is just not a good lawn fertilizer. That's all I'm saying. But you can use it around trees and shrubs and flower beds and all that stuff.
Okay. Now, somebody in the neighborhood put some stuff on his, kind of, it looks like a mess. You know, it's kind of, the shape of it is not round. It's just kind of odd. And it seems like he put that stuff on where the weeds were the worst or something. And it looks black, almost, I mean, dark, dark, dark brown. Just looks black. And he put that on his lawn. What do you think that was?
No idea.
No idea. Okay. And I have some more cottonseed meal.
Yeah, that's good. See, that's a nice, long, slow-acting type of, and it's a natural source of nitrogen, but it's good. It'd be good for the lawn, too. It takes 15 pounds to 1,000 square feet.
Okay. All right. Is it too soon if I start putting it down next week, a little early I recommend
based on turf science and research done across the Southeast from Texas to Florida, the Carolinas, I recommend waiting till around the 1st of April. And I'm sticking with that because that's what we've shown is best for the – if you fertilize – and other folks are listening. Let me throw out why. If you fertilize grass early, it greens up and it looks great. But what happens is when grass first starts to green up in the spring, if you fertilize it then, it kicks out a lot of green growth, but it stops the rooting. And so the grass doesn't get off to a good start. And a month later, you got a great-looking lawn with not many roots. So let's wait till the grass is greened up. It's called spring transition in turf world. Let's wait till it's greened up, been mowed a couple of times, the ground is warm, then fertilize. And, you know, or do whatever you want to do, but I'm sticking with what I know. Not my opinion. Auburn says this, so you know I'm just sticking with that.
I stick with what you tell me. I will wait till April, and I remember you talking about the root system not being very strong if it's too early and too cold.
Okay, so we got this one worked out, Louise from Mobile. We appreciate your call. That's some good questions there, Java. Good questions.
And we have some more lined up.
Go up to South Haven, Mississippi. Rebecca, thank you for holding. How are you today?
Good morning, Felder. Appreciate you being there.
You bet. What's up?
Well, I am, honest to goodness, asking for a friend because I only have one rose bush, and it's my one rose bush is amazing. We bought it at Kmart back when there was a Kmart for $3.50, and it's... Yeah, it's had black spot, but it just keeps coming back, so we just love it. But I've got a friend that has got a very small landscaping side business, and one of the yards, she planted a whole row of knockout roses, and they were beautiful, and they all got Rosetta.
Yep.
And she pulled them all out, and she's getting differing opinions on whether to put more roses there. Should she never put more roses there? Should she put them right back in?
These are good questions. But again, like with the other caller, forget opinions. Here's the facts. Rosette is a virus that's spread mechanically from plant to plant, which means, and once a plant gets infected, it spreads throughout the whole plant. There's no way to get it out is no cure for it. But it's spread from plant to plant, usually by little insects, aphids and thrips and other little insects that move from infected plants to non-infected plants, and they spread sort of like the entomological version of dirty needles. You can also spread it from plant to plant with pruning shears. If you snip a plant that's infected and move right to the next plant, there's just enough sap on there to infect the new plant. So insects and pruning shears are the two main ways where they spread. So once you get rid of them, if you give it a little bit of time until the insects that fell off have either died or moved on or something like that, then you can go ahead and plant back in the same area.
So, which is, you plant roses or
I'm just saying the vector is gone. The thing that spreads the disease is no longer there. If you dig them up and immediately replant, you know, there's a good chance that aphids and thrips and stuff like that that fell off the infected plants are still hanging around and get on the new plants. But if, you know, if she waits a little while, you know, a few months or something to replant roses, that normally that would be fine. But but roses aren't the only plant out there. We have so many good plants besides knockout roses. So many.
I knew you'd say that.
It's true. I'm saying that because it's true. A lot of people insist on doing what they want to do, and sometimes it's not practical, and so we drop back to Plan B. But anyway, if she wants to replant, if it's been a couple of 3 or 4 months since there are roses there, probably not a problem replanting there.
Okay. What other plant would you recommend?
I've written books and books and books on that. There's just so many good. Okay. Y'all go to Dixon Gallery and across the street to the Botanical Garden there in Memphis and look at all the stuff they got. There's so many good plants. Roses are great. I love roses, but they're you know, when you plant them in a row, you're asking for trouble.
Okay. Now I've got a second question for you. Different topic here. Got another friend that's had asparagus. Last year was her third year. This is her fourth year, and nothing's coming up. And she's wondering, give it a couple more weeks.
Yeah, it's just beginning to come up. It's just beginning to come up. The further north you go, the better asparagus grows. But it grows fine, you know, in north and central south. It'll even grow along the Gulf Coast. But it's just now starting to come up. Usually, I think, late March, April.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know, let's just wait and see. And what I would also recommend is have your friend plant some daffodils there this fall so you got something to look at while you're waiting for the asparagus to come. There's no reason you can't plant daffodils in with asparagus.
Well, that's what I did, and I'm really enjoying my daffodils.
Good.
Planted my asparagus last fall and put daffodils with them, and I'm really enjoying the daffodils.
Well, all righty, lady. Well, we're going to move on.
Thank you so much, Felder. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, Felder, before we go to our good friend Francis in Natchez, I just want to let everybody know that the podcast of this episode is brought to you by the Varicosity Vein Center. And for more information about the Varicosity Vein Center, you can visit varicosityveincenter.com. We really appreciate all of our sponsors.
And before we go to this next call, let me mention what I call pub talk, because I always hear all sorts of stuff at the pub. Here's a classic thing. Felder, let me ask you. I know you aren't working, but that's the way it always starts. What are those things that come up right now and you have to pull them up?
Wait.
That was my question. What are those things? I know you're not working, but put your beer down and tell me, what's that coming up right now that you're supposed to pull up?
No
description.
I'm thinking,
I said, your pants, okay? Anyway, sorry about that. Let's go to Francis in Natchez. Hey, Francis, good morning, sir.
Hey, fella. Thanks for having me on.
Sure, what's up?
I got three questions. Excuse me. First one is, three questions, one comment. Question one is, I made you aware of eating gardenia leaves, you know, flower leaves. My gardenias, the leaves, some of them are turning yellow and falling off.
Yeah.
Why? Next question. Oh. I've asked you this before. The sago palm. It's a lot of babies around the plant. How do you go transplant them to another area? Third, if a fruit tree blooms, does it necessarily mean that you're going to get fruit? And the comment is, I remember this guy in the neighborhood and people didn't like him. Just before the rain, they would throw fertilizer out all over his yard.
Oh,
and
no.
He was wondering why he was cutting his grass so much.
That's guerrilla gardening. Answer your questions. I've already forgotten the first one.
First one, my gardenia.
Oh, yeah. Okay. A gardenia leaves is an older leaf shed, which they do, just like magnolia. They put on new leaves, the old leaves fall off. Gardenia leaves turn bright yellow before they shed. That's normal. So, next question.
The sago palm.
Just twist them up.
Once, but I forgot.
Put on some gloves because they got sharp little things. And it's hard to explain, but it's like needles sticking out of them. Put on some gloves and grab one and just give it a good twist and just sort of like you're unscrewing a light bulb until it comes out and it's to get some dirt.
Okay.
And the fruit tree. Okay. Just because a fruit tree blooms doesn't mean it's going to have fruit because some you have. They don't pollinate themselves. They need pollen from a nearby related variety. In other words, two apple trees, most apples won't produce by themselves. You put two different kinds out there, and they cross-pollinate, they'll make apples. So you have to have bees to pollinate them, and in a lot of cases, depending on the fruit, you need two different varieties nearby. It's not always true, but like there's some pears pollinate themselves, some won't. So you need bees and need pollen. So it
okay, but you know, I got the bees because I got a lot of wild plum trees around the yard.
Yeah, but see, a plum tree won't pollinate a pear tree.
Okay, well, this is, I'm thinking about, I can't think of the name of this stuff. A mayhaw tree.
Yeah.
When I bought the tree, the guy said that it was the company said that it was self-pollinate.
Yeah, right. It is. Yeah, but they will always have better fruit. It's like blueberries. One blueberry bush will have blueberries if it gets pollinated by bees. But if you have two different varieties, they will both have more fruit. But anyway, no, mayhaw is a native plant. They're self-fertile, but they just have to have bees to diddle the flowers. Okay, man, we got a scoop. You got some good questions. As far as neighbors, what I would do is I would throw clover seed out there too. See you, man. Bye. Okay, Java, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
I don't know. You said it.
That's right. We got a little strip up and down State Street in Jackson, where I live. Between a curb and the sidewalks is like a little foot and a half strip of clay, and I plant all sorts of stuff out there. Nobody knows it but me. So don't tell anybody.
Of course.
Okay, let's go down to Mobile. Gene, thank you for holding. What's going on?
Hey, much good. I'm trying to hear. Can you hear me without this machine running next door blowing a leaf?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. If it's you, take your finger off the trigger.
Listen, I've got a window that faces due east on my house, and I've got a little baker's rack that I inherited.
Right.
And I used it during the Christmas time to put amaryllis on it. It did beautifully in there. So I took those out. And I want to plant some kind of plants in pots, and I'm thinking about planting some sun patience in there. And it don't get direct sun; it's a bulk up something, tree leaves and stuff.
Yeah.
So it don't get too hot. But does anything be better than the sun patience put in there?
Well, the sun patience look great, but what they would look better is if you had created a little tropical scene. If you get some asparagus fern, you know what airplane plant or spider plant is.
Uh-huh.
You know, they got those cascading things. You know, put one of those on one shell, put some patience on a couple of three shells, and mix up some foliage plants, but asparagus fern.
You been talking to my wife?
Nope. Is that her in the background?
No, it's not her, but she's always got all these ideas planting all this stuff.
It works. See, it works. And that way, if one of your sun patients die, nobody can tell.
Well, you know, I had a sun patient for several years. This last one, my wife got sick, and I couldn't take care of them.
Yeah.
I rooted them. I'd root 200 of them.
Yeah.
And I ain't got the first one this year. So.
Well,
the summertime, by any chance?
Yeah. They do fine. But some patients, just mix some things up. Create a little scene there, a little tropical
thing.
All right,
man. You made my day.
Okay. Appreciate it, man. Go tell them to calm.
You have a good one.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now let's go to Lester in Germantown. What's up, Lester?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So far, so good. What's up?
First time calling. I bought some tulip bulbs a while back, but I never did get a chance to plant them. I was wondering, is it too late to plant them? I say up like in close to Memphis area?
Well, you know, if you go out to Dixon Gallery, theirs are in full bloom right now. But anyway, you already got them. They're not going to save. You can't say, you know, if you ever try to save an onion or a garlic, they just sort of disappear or turn rot. So, they're not going to save. So you might as well. These aren't by any chance. Have they been in the refrigerator at all?
No.
Okay.
They're hanging in the garage.
Well,
they already kind of sprout now.
Yeah, I'd go ahead and plant them. You know, they're one-shot things anyway. You know, you get one flower out of each one of them, and that's it. They don't come back the next year. So what I'd do is I would put some in pots here and there and then stick you some kind of flower in the middle of the pot so you got something to look at till the tulip blooms. When the tulip is gone, you still got a flower to look at. But I'd go ahead and plant them. They're not going to stay. You can't save until fall.
Right. Okay.
All righty, man.
Thank you a lot.
You bet. Hey, Lester, appreciate you calling, man. Hey, and I want to ask this. First-time caller, how's it been? Was it okay?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I've been listening to you for a long time. This is my first time getting the nerve up to call you.
Well, listen, do us a favor. When it's all said and done, if they work, let me know. If they didn't work, let me know. But let's talk about it later.
Okay.
Okay, Lester, appreciate it, man.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, we got, before we go to the cheesy tune, let's go to Ridgeland and talk with Don. Don, what's up?
Hey, Felder, can you hear me? I'm in the rain. I'm sorry, driving.
It's a lot of rain. Yeah, I can hear you fine. What's going on?
Great, thank you. Love your show. I've got Bermuda grass in my yard, and I've got these green areas of, look like a weed with petals or something on it. Grows close to the ground. I hate the way it looks because it just makes my Bermuda look horrible.
Yeah.
How do I get rid of that? What is it, do you think?
Well, it's like that pub thing. What's that coming up right now? What can I do about it? Without seeing it, I can't tell you exactly what it is, but let's just call it a weed, okay? And there's two kinds. There's grassy weeds, and they look like grasses, and they can be really low growing, and there's broadleaf weeds. If it ain't a grass, it's called a broadleaf. And there are weed killers you can use on those that won't hurt Bermuda grass. So if you'll go to any garden center and get something that says for controlling dandelions or clover or something like that, that will control that little weed. But now it's getting a little bit late. You know, we're starting to see a little bit of grass greening up, but the stuff that'll kill the clovers and the dandelions and all, it won't hurt Bermuda grass. It'll hurt St. Augustine. But if you want to go ahead and get you a liquid spray, it'll be pretty tomorrow. You know, let's do this as soon as you can. And don't stand there and just dose it. Just, you know, mix up one of these weed killers and just wet the leaves of these weeds. And within a few days, it'll start turning yellow.
That's great. Will it, if I don't do anything, will the grass overtake it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bermuda grass. If you'll wait till April, till next month, and give your grass just go ahead and get a good lawn fertilizer, not a garden fertilizer, a lawn fertilizer. You put it out in April, then Bermuda grass will overcome just about anything. And if you have a real big problem with it right now, you could spray next January on a nice warm day in January, early February. While those weeds are still small, they're easier to kill. So if you don't want weeds in your yard, if you don't see them as wildflowers, if you'll spray them on a nice warm day or week in the earlier in the winter, before they get big, they're easier to control and they won't irritate you. Well, we just don't think about it then. So, you know, just put your note on the refrigerator to spray next January.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Oh, wait, one last thing. Just say no to weed and feed. Fertilize separate. No, I'm serious. This is based on turf science. Fertilize in April, but use your weed killers separate. It's a whole lot better.
Okay.
Okay, hands on the wheel. You got more rain headed your way.
I pulled over.
Okay, appreciate it, Don. Thanks. All righty. Job, it's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, we've been rocking and rolling. Hey, we do have open phone lines, though.
Job, MPB, we got medical stuff. We got travel. We got Mr. Fix-It. We got the foodies. We've got the garden. How come they ain't a weekly music thing?
There are Saturday nights are made for music right here at MPB. Felder, what are you doing, man?
That was a softball. That was a softball. And is it available on podcast also?
Yes, yes. Okay. From 5 p.m. to well past midnight on Saturday nights, you can get your music fix from all genres. When I say all, I mean all.
Well, we just want to let you know, those of you who like the laid-back Hugh Masekela tune or the more upbeat Friends of Distinction from the 60s, or you like the original Mr. Bull number 4, we're here for you. But let's talk about gardening now. Back to gardening. We got a couple of callers on the line. We're going to start in Covington, Louisiana, talking with Polly. Polly, thank you for holding on. What's going on?
Hey, Felder, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Is it too late to sow grass seeds?
It's just now beginning to be the time.
Okay, good, good, good.
Wait. What kind of grass seed are you talking about?
Well, this is a problem. I don't know what I have. Okay. I know it's not Zoysia, and I know it's not Bermuda.
Well, it's going to be either Centipede or St. Augustine. St. Augustine doesn't come from seeds, so your choice is going to be Centipede.
Okay, and I figured that St. Augustine would. Okay, so I can just throw it out there?
Well, I would wait a little bit longer. The soil, our very first caller today, drawn total blank, Rosenblatt.
Okay. But,
anyway, our first caller was talking about soil temperature. Centipede seed won't sprout till the ground gets warm. And down in south, that close to the coast, latter part of this month. But here's the trick. Seed has got to be in contact with the dirt, not just caught up in a bunch of weeds. It needs to be on the dirt to do well. And it takes centipede seed almost a month just to sprout. Once it sprouts, it's great. But you need to be prepared to wet the area down. Not water it, but just wet the seeds down every couple of 3 days for nearly a month until it sprouts. Because if we have a hot, dry spell and they're just cracking open, they can die. So a little bit of water, just wet the area down every couple of 3 days till it sprouts. And if you wait till closer to April, the seed will sprout quicker.
Okay, good, 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 good. That's what I needed to know. I love your show. I wouldn't miss it.
It might have been more than you wanted to know, but it's what you needed to know. Thanks for your call, Polly. See you later. Okay, and let's slide up to Neshoba County. Bill, Wild Man Bill, what's going on, guy?
I just wanted to start off by saying how much I liked your presentation at the Starkville Library.
It was an interesting group, and I got bold. I was saying some things you probably couldn't say 300 yards to the east on campus.
So, well, I won't tell if you won't tell.
There you go. So what's up? I did have fun. What's up?
Okay. I have 4 Cassalong iris beds.
Mm-hmm.
And I only had time over the winter to cut one of them back.
Uh-huh.
And the other three, they're all coming up, but I can see that there's little brown spots on them. Have I doomed them to failure, or should I do?
I don't know. I don't know what the brown spots are. There is a fungus that's called rust that gets on them sometime, and there's some fungal leaf
right.
spots, but I don't know. So is a new growth coming out with spots on it, or is it last year's growth? Can you tell?
Hard to tell.
Yeah.
Hard to tell. I think it's last year's growth.
Yeah, if it's last year's,
sure.
The new growth should come up nice and clean. And it's going to be a decent day tomorrow, or the next day. If you could get out there and just, are these big beds? Are we talking about a lot of irises?
Well, you add all 3 of them together, it does turn up to be a lot.
Yeah. Most of the time, you don't have to really do much with irises. The new growth will come up fine. And it'd be nice and clean. If it's got a disease on it, sometime this summer, I would just leave them alone if you can. Maybe snip off a few bad-looking leaves now, but just leave them alone. And sometime over the summertime, let's find out for sure what the problem is. You can take some of those leaves to the county extension office, there in Philadelphia, and they can send them off for free to the plant pathology lab, and they'll say it's a bacteria, it's a fungus. If we find out for sure what it is, we can keep it from happening next year. But it's not going to kill your irises. It just boogers them up a little bit.
Okay. I'll try that. Wait until later and take it to the county extension office.
Yeah, and then let me know, because I'm always curious about stuff like this. But the main thing is that you don't have to do – irises grow in cemeteries. Dead people can grow irises. And a lot of times they don't look good up close. Sort of like me, you know, if you sit back in the back, I'm okay. You get up close, I got a boogered up nose. Same thing with your irises. We're okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay. But, hey, let me ask you this. Was this the first time you've been to one of my lectures?
Yeah, I've been to several.
Okay. So, you know, it's the same old stuff. I just get up and dance and prance around. Somebody called me the Rolling Stones of cucumbers.
Well, yeah, you make me happy.
Good.
I'm glad to listen to you.
It's all about gardening, man. I appreciate your call, Bill. Thank you.
And now, answers to unasked questions from Felder Rushing.
That's right. Somebody asked me, and I said unasked question, but they actually asked this one. What causes spring fever? Yeah, that's a good one. And come to find out, and I'm not a medical guy. You know, y'all can run this by the medical programs. But in general, in the fall, the days start getting shorter. We start losing a little color. And our pineal gland, tiny little gland about the size of a grain of rice, it starts pumping out this stuff. And it's caused by, get this, suprachiasmatic nucleus. It regulates how much light gets to our brain. Anyway, it starts pumping out this stuff that covers up our excitement. It makes us slow down. We put on an extra layer of fat because it's about to get cold. We get slow and almost dull. Middle of the winter, it gets so bad, we get depressed. They call it seasonal affective disorder, you know, the winter blues, because the low level of light is masking this stuff that makes us feel good. But in the spring, when the days start getting a little bit longer, we get more light, there's more color coming in, then this masking stuff disappears and it starts producing stuff called melatonin, which gets us all excited, makes us want to get up and go. And same thing with other mammals. You know, so it's the amount of light and the color. Then in the fall, we lose the ability to appreciate it. We slow down for winter, and then lengthening days and color start making us feel good again. And it's all about hormones.
You researched that one.
I did. Well, you know, yeah. Yeah, I did. Because it's a good question. I've actually written about this, you know, spring fever versus winter blues and all. And that's the reason I say everybody needs a bottle tree in their yard. You put glass bottles on a stick out in your yard in the middle of the winter, you got color. It keeps you from getting the winter blues. You stave off the winter blues. So, anyway.
Now, Felder, we're coming up toward the end of the show. We still got a few people trying to sneak in.
But
if you're just joining the program, you need to know that you can listen back via podcast, which is sponsored by Varicosity Vein Center. And for more information, you can visit varicosityveincenter.com. We appreciate them for helping us out with the podcast, which is available wherever you get your audio.
All righty. Well, we're going now to, it says, 8 Mile, Alabama, and it's Clarence. Clarence, is that the name of your town, or are you 8 miles into Alabama?
No, that's the name of my town.
The name of your town, is it spelled 8, E-I-G-H-T, or is it the number 8?
Either way, 8, the number or spelling, it'll work either way.
Okay, well, you know, I got to come there. Where is 8, Alabama?
It's outside of Pritchett and Mobile.
Okay.
In Mobile County.
Okay. Okay. Can I get some tamales there?
Yeah.
I'll see you there. Yeah. Anyway, what you got going on in your yard?
Well, I have a problem with some weeds and stuff, and I was about to put out some fertilizer, but I heard you. I caught the last tail of it. Well, you were saying wait till April to fertilize.
Yeah.
I've got a problem with some weeds and stuff, and I'm going to put out some Scotch
turf field or weed and feed.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing. Weed and feed, the ingredients are okay. Just like sugar is good and toothpaste is good, but you don't have sugary, cherry-flavored toothpaste. It's a bad combination of otherwise good ingredients. You need to wait till the grass is greened up and been mowed a couple of times, the new growth, which is around end of March, 1st of April, before you fertilize. Weeds are easier to kill when they're small and actively growing, and what'll kill those weeds now can damage your centipede as it's starting to green up. So it's a whole lot better just the rest of this year just to mow what grows, fertilize in April, raise your mower a little bit, and if you have a bunch of weeds this time of year and they're bothering you, make a note to spray them with a liquid herbicide next January or February while they're small. They're little. They're easy to control, and it's not as likely to damage your grass. So herbicides is chemotherapy. You can kill your patient by treating the symptoms too strongly. So a little bit late for spraying for weeds, a little bit early for fertilizer. So wait to fertilize. Make a note on the refrigerator to spray them next January or February. That's the best advice anybody can give you.
The weeds in January?
Yeah, because they're small. Those things are out there right now. If you go out there in wintertime, which I've done, they're there. They're just little. They don't bother us, but they're so easy to control then. Right now, they're bigger. They're sending energy up into flowers and all. The energy's going up. Weed killers work better when the plants are small and sending food from their leaves down. So a whole lot easier, a whole lot more effective to spray in January, early February than it is right now. Plus, you can damage your grass if you spray right now. They teach this at Auburn and Mississippi State and LSU and University of Georgia.
Okay. I got one last question. This weed, it looks like a clover leaf, but it has purple around it. And it tried to take over my yard, and it just increases. It comes in a little clump like.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got purple edges around it.
Yeah.
And it just drives me nuts.
Yeah. Does it ever have little flowers on it?
Yeah.
And they got little butterflies and pollinators and bees and stuff like that on it. That's a good thing. It bothers you, but here's the deal. What will kill that stuff if you spray it right now will kill your grass. So I would just mow it grows, and then if they're bothering you this year, try to control them a little bit earlier next year while they're easy to control. Hard to kill them right now with herbicides.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Good program, thank you.
All right, Clarence, live from 8 Mile, Alabama.
Now, that's a new one. 8 Mile. I know out in Detroit, because the rapper Eminem had a movie called 8 Mile,
yeah.
But I didn't know it was an 8 Mile, Alabama.
Let's see if we get to Melanie in Memphis. Hey, Melanie, good morning. Melanie. Uh-oh.
I don't think we're going to get to Melanie in Memphis Teresa and Brandon. It's been rock and rolling type of show, man.
It has.
It happens.
Yeah, it does. It does. And we took up a lot of time with music today.
Well, sometimes we need to take up a lot of time with
music. Grazing the grass, having a good time. A lot of rain today, but it's going to be pretty tomorrow. Got a whole lot of stuff going on. Hey, if you get a chance when you're in Jackson, go by the Agriculture Museum. It's off of Lakeland Drive near Interstate 55. And look at the herb garden there, the doctor's herb garden that the master gardeners have been taking care of. It's looking good. And if you have a chance to take a kid to a farmer's market or to a garden center, get them a pot, some potting soil, handful of flowers, and especially some culinary herbs. Nothing like teaching a kid how to grow oregano and parsley and thyme and rosemary, and they can have ownership in their meals by helping cook spaghetti and chili and pizza and stuff. Teach a kid through their senses. We're going to take a break. We call it a week. We'll be back next time. Teresa, Melanie, hope you get a chance to call back then, or email me, felderrushing.blog, or it doesn't matter. Just take your time. Breathe in, breathe out, and go out and get dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.